I'm outraged most of the time at how the progress seems to stall, how difficult it is for young people to realize that their very freedoms are in jeopardy if they're not willing to fight for them.
Turning outrage into outcomes. This is the Texas Blue Action Podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Texas Blue Action Podcast. We are so excited to have you join us here today. And if this is your first time joining us, I would love to have you go back and check out some of the other episodes that we've done. You know, each week we confront a different topic, and we've talked about everything from the permitless carry bill with Shannon Watts to the anti-abortion bill SB 8 that passed. We have also had great conversations with candidates about the barriers for women running for office in Texas, and they are all streaming wherever you find your podcast, so we would love to have you go back and check them out. Today, however, I am incredibly excited to have with us three activists here in Texas who are here to discuss the fact that Texas is becoming younger and more diverse, and what that means for the upcoming election next year. It's going to be huge in Texas. And so far, the top of the ticket isn't exactly representing the diversity that we're seeing in Texas. We know with the latest census that almost 95% of that growth was people of color. And we also know that in order to flip some of these seats that are within our grasp, we need the youth turnout. So I want to start by introducing Katia Erisman, Jeffrey Clemens, and Rick Galvin. And my name is Lana Hansen. And I want to start with y'all telling us a little bit about what you do, because you all play very important roles in not only education, but, you know, connecting with youth voters. And also, you know, Katia, I know you have been incredibly active in the redistricting fight, which very much plays into this conversation as well. So I would love to start with you, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about what you're doing and what that has looked like for you recently.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having us, Lana. And this has been a really stressful year to be working in Texas voting rights and in advocacy work. I think the time I've spent with Jeffrey and Rick talking about youth voting has been the best time, but also it's been hard conversations that we've had. So my name is Katia Erisman. I use she, her pronouns. I am a grassroots organizer for Common Cause Texas. And like you mentioned, we're doing a lot of work around redistricting, but mostly kind of a larger effort of public education campaigns and organizing around issues like voting rights and just general organizing to get people to not only know a lot of the issues that are happening at the legislature, but be informed enough to testify, to mobilize their friends, to speak out about it. And that comes from democracy issues, but also the intersectional issues that anti-voter bills have with things like abortion rights, things like gun control, and other ways that unpopular policy issues can get passed in an anti-democratic state. So really working on mobilizing young people and bringing them into those conversations and bringing resources to them as well.
And tell me a little bit about what drew you to that work. What made you want to, you know, get involved in activism and specifically the work that you're involved in now?
Yeah, I think I was experiencing the results of policy failure in a way that I didn't realize was a failure by our elected officials until I got to college. And I grew up very low income and experienced a lot of things that Texas should be doing to improve the conditions for families to prosper, but they weren't doing that. And it wasn't until a grassroots organizer on a college campus like came to me and was like, you can register to vote, like this is what your vote can do, did I really connect a lot of those lived experiences with policy and public policy work and organizing. And so I think my work now with a grassroots organizing at Common Cause is kind of
originating from being the product of grassroots organizing that allowed for me to be brought into this space. And
Especially around voting rights and the failure of high schools to be compliant with high school voter registration. And it took me until getting into college to be brought into this kind of world of advocacy when it should have been much earlier.
And schools are failing young people with that. So I think
being affected by those things kind of made me realize that there is so much that needs to be done. And now I have not stopped working on trying to fix the problems because the problems keep popping up. So that's kind of what brought me in.
Sure. I mean, I think once you understand the problems, it is hard to disengage, right? Once you realize that there's something that you can do and that it's important, it is there's no turning back from that, right? So I hate to tell you, but you're probably stuck forever doing this work until we resolve the issue. But, you know, that seems to be how it goes. And I think to your point also, all politics are personal. Right. But until somebody comes to us, and that's the importance of organizing, and says, hey, you can make a difference, or it is policy that's driving this issue, and we don't realize that we should be engaged. And you're right, our education system is failing in teaching our children that. And so, you know, hopefully those are all things we can continue to work on and resolve. And Jeffrey, I would love to hear a little about your story and the work that you're doing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having all of us on. I am very excited for this conversation. So my name is Jeffrey Clemens. I'm a senior studying political science at Houston Tillotson University, Austin's illustrious HBCU, one of the 9 in Texas. And on campus, I am the president of our NAACP chapter. I think everyone should be familiar with what the NAACP does, but for those who aren't, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People works on all kinds of issues, including voting rights, including civic engagement, making people more aware of what's going on around them, and connecting them with kind of the tools to be effective organizers in the field to actually address some of those issues. In addition to that, off campus, I proudly serve as the chair of the Austin College Student Commission. We represent the 5 major colleges in Austin, which is about 100,000 students. I mean, we work on all kinds of issues that deal with student quality of life, including transportation, food insecurity, our civic rights, among other things. So that's a bit about me.
That's amazing. I mean, and so impressive that y'all are doing this work at this point in your life. I mean, I was a hot mess in college and I was not doing anything that productive. So I am so, you know, impressed, and it brings me so much hope to know that there are folks like you that are getting engaged now. And I've seen every one of your faces at the Capitol doing this work. So in addition to all those things, I know you're down there tackling stuff that's going on at the ledge. And, you know, for most of us, the Capitol was just a place to bring tourists when they were in town for a, you know, a tour of the building. And so again, that's also impressive. And so with that, Rick, tell us a little bit about what you do and, you know, how you spend your time down there.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm super excited to be on this panel with some of my favorite people in the whole world. And so I'm looking forward to this conversation. But my name is Rick Galvan, pronouns are he, him. I'm from San Antonio, Texas. I'm currently at school at UT Austin. I'm a senior there studying history. What I do normally is I work with Texas Freedom Network as the Central Texas Campus Organizer for Texas Rising. So I oversee the Texas Rising student chapters at UT Austin, Houston Tillotson University, St. Edward University, Baylor University, and Texas A&M College Station. So I have a lot of fun working with them, fighting for social justice and equality at all those universities. That's a good time there. And so frequently, a lot of me and some other folks from Texas Rising go to the Capitol. You'll see us there fighting against trans attacks, fighting against abortion attacks, fighting against voter suppression, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the things that we deal with down here in Texas. And then I also just do some things with campaigns. One of my favorite works was, two of my favorite works was with the Elizabeth Warren campaign in 2020, and also with the Terry Castillo campaign in San Antonio for District 5.
Amazing. I mean, and both those campaigns had to be just such a treat to work on. I've recently been doing some interviews for some hiring that we're doing, and I'm going to admit that one of the questions I ask people is who was their primary candidate in 2020? And if they say Elizabeth Warren, they get a special little check next to their name.
Oh.
Anyway, so super impressed that you did that. Now, let's talk a little bit about what's coming up next year in Texas, right? We've got a huge election year coming up. And, you know, we still don't have anybody that has announced for governor. You know, we have somebody that's considering it. But we do have a few people running for attorney general and, you know, running against our lieutenant governor. And let's talk about that race, the race against Dan Patrick for a minute, because what we've seen are we have two ex-Republicans that have stepped up to run that race. And, you know, Katia had sent out a tweet that sort of caught my attention that said, you know, we need to stop, catering to moderate Republicans and start engaging the youth voters. And what we saw, you know, in 2020 is that that's exactly right. You know, the net gain of votes from non-white young voters, meaning people under 30, was 67% that voted for progressive politics and progressive candidates. And so we know that that's who we should be targeting, and that there's still, even though we went up 600% in voter turnout between 2016 and 2020, it was still only 41% of the eligible youth vote that showed up. So we know we still have a lot of room to bring people to the table. So I want to hear your thoughts about what those candidates, you know, being on the ballot, if that excites you, if that makes you want to talk to others about them. And then tell me a little bit more about the candidates you'd like to see on the ballot. So Katya, we'll go back to you since you started with that tweet. And let's talk about, you know, that exact point. Why we need to stop in Texas catering to moderate Republicans and understand that Texans will vote for progressive policy.
Yeah, absolutely. I will have to say that every time anybody says, I saw something you tweeted, I get really nervous. So I am glad that this was a helpful conversation. And I love that this topic is coming up, but that did make me very nervous. But yeah, I think that the kind of running of two former Republicans to white men, to older candidates that don't necessarily have
spent the past few months or the past few years even in doing grassroots work on these issues, I think
to not really sugarcoat it, I think that's a failure of the party and of this kind of upcoming election to really tap into a lot of the narratives and the current status quo of like anger that we are seeing, and also in what has been mobilized in the past few months, because especially against Dan Patrick. Dan Patrick is the agenda setter of the Texas legislature. He is the one forcing the hand, except for with the exception of Donald Trump forcing these like audit bills. He's really forcing the hand of the governor to put items on the call, to push through these attacks on trans kids, to push through these voter suppression bills, to push through these gerrymandered maps. And so I think that when he is the origin of a lot of these really anti-democratic, anti-voter, and unpopular policies, I don't think it's an education issue, or I think it might be an education issue of people not being able to connect it back to him and his role. But part of that is also we need a candidate that is a opposite of a lot of those narratives that are being pushed by his office. And I think one thing that I see as a problem is that running two former Republican white men at the top of that ticket against his position doesn't necessarily match the opposition that people have been bringing to the work that his office has been doing. So not only to mention that Texas is a growingly young, diverse voting population, and that is the people that will not only be voting and being able to make up the difference in 2022, but also in future elections, we need to be meeting them where they are and where they want to be represented. I do also think it's just like a political failure for us to be able to meet the issues of that office and how dangerous and it has been to young people, to Black and Brown Texans, and to progressive Texans generally, but also every Texan that feels the repercussions of these unpopular policies.
I'm in full agreement, but I also want to push, you know, just a little bit and say, you know, that there are a lot of people, I think, since 2016 that once identified as Republicans that now, you know, don't because of the direction that the party has taken. So I wondered, is it so much that they're ex-Republicans for you? Is it more of the demographic that they represent, meaning, you know, their age and being white men and the fact that they are more moderate than what we feel like we need to prevent the bills that we're seeing?
I think it's both. And I think Rick and Jeffrey, I know, have a lot of takes about this. So I think it's going to be a really fun conversation. But I think all of the above is maybe the short answer, because I think the moderacy is part of the problem. Like, Dan Patrick has not been moderate in his attacks on Texans or our rights, and we don't need to be moderate in our response to it. And I think that largely is the thing that I'm the most kind of worried about seeing as our response is that I think there's a concern that Texas Democrats can't win statewide, so we should be trying to appeal to the right instead of it appealing to the anger of the majority of Texans that are against these policies. We see so many polls get put into the field every time there's a new debate on the floor that like 60% of Texans oppose this fraudulent bill, 72% of Texans oppose the attacks on trans kids, 90% of Texans disapprove of these heartbeat bills. And so I think if that is the case and 92% of those Texans do believe in abortion rights, then we should be going as far to that narrative as possible instead of playing it safe and being a moderate. And so I think that's maybe the thing that's most upsetting, not only the fact that he doesn't or neither of them represent the demographic makeup of Texans.
I 100% agree. And Jeffrey, I would love to, you know, hear your thoughts on this and also address something that Katya mentioned, that, you know, this is potentially a failure of the party to not be recruiting the type of candidates that can, you know, represent what Texas currently looks like. Do you feel that same way? And then also, you know, what do you think the real issue is with running, you know, moderate Republicans in the Democratic primary?
I mean, I definitely think it is. I think in a state of almost 30 million people, you'd think that we'd be able to come up with a few more candidates than what we have now, especially candidates who are more progressive, candidates who are going to be stronger when they actually get to the floor. Like Katya was saying, you know, Dan Patrick hasn't run a moderate Senate. He's run a radical Senate. And so we have a lot of things to undo when we come back into power. Right. And so we need someone who we can trust to actually go into the Senate and clean up this mess that he's created, because like we were just saying, these issues are not popular that he's bringing to the floor. He's bringing them to the floor because they're red meat issues that are supposed to be turning out their base. And so to the point about who the candidate should be, I think that we have to have someone who's also going to turn out our base. We do need someone who is going to raise the profile of the office of the lieutenant governor and prove to everyone that this is a very important office that kind of sets the agenda in the Senate and pretty much for the whole state, because whatever Dan Patrick brings to the floor, Greg Abbott signed. So whoever becomes the Democratic governor, they're the ones who they're going to be able to refer those final bills. And so we've got to have someone who's going to be really bold and who's going to be willing to get into office and not make compromises, but actually fight for the people and what they need. And these issues are also popular at the local level, too. And it's not just the bread and butter issues either. But, you know, some of these more progressive issues, like people do want health care in Texas, believe it or not. you know, I think that Texas should have been one of the first states to legalize marijuana. You know, I think that's a low bar, but I wish that we had it, you know, or even when it comes to voting rights. We all want to be able to vote easier. You know, it's about time that we have online voter registration, about time that we had automatic voter registration, about time that we had independent redistricting committee, so that way people aren't getting drawn out of their districts, or you have communities that are being split up. It'd be nice if we had a lieutenant governor who would be willing to bring those maps to the floor and be able to do those things to reform Texas civic culture. And to, you know, a final point that I'll make here is I think that, you know, 41%, even though that's the amount of young people who, you know, have ended up turning out last year, that's an opportunity. You know, there's a lot of young people, right? And I think that the work that, you know, all three of us do on this call and all of us do on this call is that we're in certain spaces. You know, we organize on college campuses, but that just means that we haven't gone out far enough to some of the other spaces where young people are. There are a lot of young people who don't go to college. And so we need to find ways to also talk to them and get them engaged. Yes. Because I think that it's much easier for a college student to become engaged and know what's going on their campus and their local ballot. But who's talking to those, you know, young people who haven't been engaged, who are disillusioned from the system? I think that's where the party can be making greater investments. You know, there are many people who are calling for the party to spend more money on rural areas. And I think that is also the case for a lot of young people in rural areas who are also being overlooked and seen as not an opportunity. But 41%, 42%, that's an opportunity to get to 100%.
Absolutely. And I think that your point is really important about people in rural Texas or, you know, engaging younger people that maybe aren't in college, because, you know, what we have found through Texas Blue Action and organizing is that every neighborhood we start to organize, we knock on a door and they'll tell us they're the only Democrat in the neighborhood. And it's like, that's funny, because three doors down, that's what they said, right? And I think that's the story in rural Texas, too. And even more so in that people aren't comfortable identifying you know, or getting involved with progressive politics because they think they're the only person in the community. So that kind of outreach is going to be massively important to what we do in 2022 and, you know, which seats we flip. And, you know, I also think that the point that you brought up, you know, is so important that we need to be able to energize these voters, right? And so if our party is not contributing to getting progressive candidates that the voters that we need to show up for, you know, aren't excited about, it's not going to help us. And so, Rick, can you tell me a little bit about how you feel about that? What kind of candidate would excite you on the ticket? And you know, do you think that there's a chance that anybody will get at all excited about the two people we have running for the lieutenant governor currently?
Yeah. So, well, let me just start off by saying what I'm about to say is not representative of the views of the work that I do, or the organizations I work with, I should say. This is from me personally as Rick. And I'm here talking to some of my favorite people, so I'm going to be a little less formal. But I will still try to keep it within the formal bounds. Let me just say, first of all, that I think that any candidate that's going to be running for statewide office or any candidate that's going to be running in general should not be overlooking young people, particularly if they're going to be claiming to be progressive or on the Democratic Party side in any form. The candidates that usually they win here in Texas get the youth vote. The candidates that make those transformational change here in Texas get the youth vote and actually reach out. And so I think it's always interesting to see that some candidates who are running in these big positions aren't ones who are talking to young people. And, you know, we're out here. We're the organizations all across Texas that are focused on youth organizing, some that are built by young people, some that have been here for a very long time. And yet suddenly these candidates come out and they're like, oh, I've never heard of this group. And it's like, how plugged in are you in the organizing atmosphere that I should trust you? Because I know who's there at the Capitol with me. I know who's there fighting all day for 18 hours to get our testimony in. I know who's there for the elections locally, for the ballot propositions locally, for the fight at city council. And if I don't see those folks there, I'm not one who's going to plug in full force. You know, that becomes their problem to go win because they didn't seem to want to reach out to any young people to begin with. I think a lot about the candidates like Jose Garza or Terry Castillo, who made intentional efforts to talk to young people on college campuses and beyond, and wanted to really bring all the folks into the table, because that's what folks need to understand that these folks are going to go there and represent us and fight for us. I think it's a big thing about Latinx voters in Texas. There's a lot of conversation about like why Latinx voters are turning towards the Republican Party, and it's like, well, we're the Democrats that are reaching out to them. Because it can't be the last day early voting.
That's exactly right. I mean, there's so much. I mean, I think we saw that in the Valley in 2018, right? That the Republicans were the only people down there doing the groundwork. And when Democrats did show up, it was transactional. It was the week before the election. And why am I showing up or spending my time with you if you only talk to me a few days before election? And that goes back to the important work, the important organizing work that you all are doing to build those relationships. And like you said, the trust with these voters to get them out to vote. And in that leadership role that y'all have in building that trust, I'm sure it's important to be able to say, I do back this candidate or I don't, right? And so, you know, that goes back to the importance of having exciting candidates on the ballot.
Yeah, and to answer that question too about who I think should run, I mean, I've always been someone, I'm a San Antonio boy. Just straight up, I always have been, always will be, and I'm very proud of it. And so, of course, I always want to see Julian Castro lead the state. I know he already said no, but I think folks like him, even if it's not him, folks like him who are passionate about working people, who are passionate about fighting for progressive values, who know how to call out leaders when they're doing horrible things, is important to have as an alternative to what we're seeing. Because it can't be someone running who's going to be nice-handed towards Greg Abbott, towards Dan Patrick, because these folks are not nice, like Katya and Jeffrey said. I got into organizing. The first thing I did was because of Dan Patrick. I came to the Capitol for the bathroom bill because he wanted to ban transgender people from just existing. So if that's going to happen, we need folks who are going to stand up and say, no, we're here fighting for our Texans here, our trans Texans, for our Latino Texans, for Black Texans, et cetera, et cetera. So that's when I think of an exciting candidate, I think of folks like him or Lena Hidalgo, who are here doing the groundwork constantly.
Oh, they're both amazing. And I'm in full agreement. You know, I hope we see them both around for a long time. And I hope Julian does eventually jump back in somewhere here in Texas and do that work for us. And, you know, I think that it's such an interesting time because we just can't afford to not be energizing our youth base, right? We just can't afford to not do that as Democrats in Texas. And, you know, what we're seeing is our Republicans are really a minority. That huge right wing, this red meat issue stuff that we see, that is not the majority of Texans. And, you know, I think that's important, I hope, on a national scale, that people really pay attention to that and look at the numbers here and see that the majority of us really want, you know, equity and equality and, you know, progressive values and policies in our state. And, you know, but these guys, like you said, keep throwing, you know, the bone the other direction. And so, you know, talk to me about folks in your circle. Do they talk about running for office? Are there, you know, individuals that you know that you would like to see throw their hat in the ring? And why don't they? And so, Katia, I'll start with you there.
Yeah, I mean, I routinely tell Jeffrey and Rick on this call that they should run for office eventually. So I'm going to take this moment to plug that as well. Yep. Look out for the mobilize.
I'll go ahead and second that. Y'all should run for office.
Hopefully there will be a mobilized link in like 4 to 5 years and we can circulate that as well. But I think so. I think, but right now, especially with young people, the question isn't as much like, will I run for office? But it's like, do I have the time and capacity to get engaged? And are people making that a welcoming space for me? And I think, especially when it comes to campaigns, like Rick mentioned, like it's about intentionality and effort from candidates. And like what I think Rick made an excellent point. Like I haven't seen either candidate for lieutenant governor at any of the Senate hearings on any of these bills. And I think that would not only be a really impactful thing in terms of the policy debate that we're experiencing in the legislature, but also a really important thing to show that young people can trust them. And exactly what Rick mentioned, I just wanted to uplift that I think that that's a really important thing for us to see in campaigns and for people in our circles to see as something that is worth them spending the time, because young people have class, they have work, they have to try to live and also try to pay attention to politics and follow along everything at the same time. And that's a lot for young Texans to do, for low income Texans to do. And I think that's part of the failure of why it's hard for them to think about even running for office, let alone getting involved in activism, because there are so many just normal barriers to being able to enter those things. And I think excitement would do a lot of excitement and effort would do a lot of go a long way to mitigating those barriers and helping inspire people to get involved. And so Rick and Jeffrey come to mind. I think young people are thinking about office, running for office being more accessible, but I think that there are still ways to go for campaigns and organizations to really make a lot of the politics and the work that we do something not only accessible, but also exciting and enticing.
Sure. And so Jeffrey, you know, tell me, do you think that running for office, I mean, of course we need progressive policymakers, but do you think that that's the best way to make change in Texas? I mean, I tend to think that there's lots of ways to be impactful in our communities. So what are your thoughts?
Absolutely. And I just want to first and foremost echo a lot of what Katia said. You know, it can be prohibitively expensive to try and run for office. And again, as a young person, you know, you may be making $15 an hour. I'm sorry. You're not you got to know some people if you're going to want to throw your hat in the ring. You've also got to be ready to start like 6 months in advance. Honestly, as an unknown candidate and as a young person, you're always going to have kind of the grain cut against you. But I think that running for office is definitely one way that you can get involved. But I think that we all can agree probably on this call that the political ecosystem is humongous, and we need every part of it in order for us to really have an effective politics. We need people who never run for office. We need people who are organizers forever, honestly, because they're more effective in that space. We do need good policymakers who will be the ones to, you know, either strike the gavel or be the ones to sign off on a piece of legislation, of course. But we've got to have people in every part of the ecosystem. Ecosystem and make sure that everyone's being involved in democracy. I've said it before on a different in a different context, but you know, democracy is something that we don't just have. It's something that we maintain every single day with all the work that we do, whether it is campaigning or whether it is being out on the streets, whether it is protesting. You know, there's a protest actually happening right now at Howard University among students, protesting the conditions that they're being forced to live with. And I think that that's an example of what people can be doing. You know, how can you improve the conditions wherever you are, no matter if you're elected or not. And so I think it's just so important for people to get involved any way they can. But running for office shouldn't be, you know, the only thing that you consider. Again, basing it on the challenges and barriers that are in place to doing that, and then the potential trade-offs. You know, if you run for office today as a Democrat who's going to run in the Texas House, you know, you're going to be in the minority. Are you prepared for what that is going to do to the agenda that you maybe ran on? And I think that that's something that people should also consider, is that unfortunately our political reality right now oftentimes means that we can't run the kind of campaigns that we really need to run or want to run for the communities we serve. And so maybe we should serve them else otherwise.
Sure. And I think you bring up so many important points about, you know, barriers for even, you know, volunteering or getting involved in the causes, you know, that we all care about. And so, Rick, can you speak to that a little bit? You know, what do you think would be really beneficial and help allow people to engage more and be more excited about engaging, you know, in the political atmosphere that we're in?
There's a lot of things I think I want to echo from Jeffrey's point. I think there's one big thing is just that being intentional about your outreach is always important, whether that means you're a candidate, whether you are an elected official already, whether you're a community organizer, community builder. There's always going to be an importance on who you're reaching out to, the communities you're talking to, and how often you're engaging them. And that also means building out power. That's something that I think a lot of folks struggle with, including myself sometimes, that you want to do it all. You know all the things already. You got to just do it all yourself. That's not the way we're going to build power and win elections and, you know, improve the material conditions of folks' lives here in Texas. You have to give some of yourself out to other people. You have to let people grow as leaders. And that means the same thing for politicians, of saying that, you know, you can't be in there forever. You also got to build up power for other folks. It means for organizers, you can't be the only one going every single day to do all the things. You have to bring some folks with you and let them grow as well and let them lead. And so I think those, and I think organizations too, I should say that. Organizations also have to make sure that they're connecting with one another and empowering one another and not trying to take credit all the time for other different things. I think they need to work in tandem, because at the end of the day, we're all in this together and we only have each other. And so if we're going to be fighting this uphill battle against Dan Patrick, against a conservative legislature, against all the systems that oppress and hurt working people, black and brown people here in Texas, we need to work in tandem and do a lot of community building along with political organizing, and then, of course, get into the political offices as well. But I think it all starts with who you talk to and making sure that you do intentional outreach.
I think you make such an important point about organizations in Texas, and I you know, speak to this often, that I think one of the most frustrating thing about Democrats in Texas is that we aren't all sitting at the table and having these discussions and able to work more efficiently, work smarter, not harder. Each of us filled a gap that we have. I think you're exactly right. We're all a piece of the puzzle, but that puzzle needs to come together. And if we're not talking to each other, you know, a lot of times we're just duplicating efforts and, you know, or, you know, the orgs that have been around for a really long time, that we don't need to reinvent the wheel. Right? We need to be talking to people that have been in this fight for a long time and understand what they know and move forward with the things that work, rather than thinking we just need to start over, you know, because maybe it can be done better. You know, everybody I know working in the progressive space has been, you know, working their tails off to do the best they can, but we all need to be sitting at the same table. And so I want to know from each of you, how are you feeling about going into 2022? Do you think that we will make gains? You know, I know it's really early. We're just now getting through redistricting. We don't even have very many candidate announcements, but just based on the work that you're doing and your outlook for Texas, how do you think we're going to come out in 2022? And Katia, maybe you can start.
Yeah, hard question. I think, I mean, there's so many variables, right? Like the House members were on the floor until 3 a.m. last night, even just figuring out what some of the seats will look like on the 2022 ballot. So I think that there are so many things up in the air. I think, and there's so much time for candidates that are currently already announced to improve and to win our trust, and for more candidates to announce and shape the narrative of the primaries. And so I think I'm optimistic because I think more Texans are not only paying attention, but more resources are being brought to Texans that have been historically disenfranchised to not only get registered to vote, but be informed voters. And so I think with that work and the effort that nonprofits like all the ones Jeffrey and Rick represent and in Common Cause as well have been bringing to the table for not just election cycles, but just year-round 24/7 organizing, that's the type of stuff that's going to be making a difference in these elections is people normalizing engagement in and around these issues and in and around voting and voting rights and elections. And so I'm optimistic. I think that Texans want better and deserve better than Dan Patrick, than Greg Abbott, than anybody on either side of the aisle that is going against the interests of everyday Texans. And so I think there is a lot of potential for the state to flip, but the work has to be done to do it. So I would love to see any candidate running in lieutenant governor, for governor, for any of the down ballot races to not only make sure to make a point of connecting all of the issues that people have been seeing on Twitter and the news, et cetera, to how those offices create those issues. Like, I think Dan Patrick should be named much more regularly in conversation as the agenda maker of these problems. And I think candidates need to be able to do that, but I think it's also going to come from conversations we all have together. And there's so much time for those conversations to be had. So I'm optimistic, but I think there's a lot of work to do.
Sure. Jeffrey, what are your thoughts?
Not even to be contrarian, but I'm a little bit more pessimistic. And so I think I would say that our definition of success should include failure in a happy way of sorts. I think that if we don't win what we think we're going to win, we can still look at what we did win. I think that we will have a lot of opportunities at the local level, for instance. I think the local level is always where magical things happen. As we saw even last year, you know, so many progressive local candidates were finally elected to office and are going to have a humongous impact on their local communities. And, you know, anything that they do at that level is going to just trickle upward to places like the State House and the State Senate. And they're going to have to deal with it at one point or another. You know, this year, unfortunately, we saw a bad conservative reaction to some of the things that were done at the local level. For instance, this statewide prohibition on camping outside for unhoused people. When we have many, many cities in this state that are dealing with a housing crisis, like the city of Austin. and so we saw that reaction. But that doesn't negate the fact that we can still do really good things in the offices that we do win. And like Katia said, I think that persistence is going to be really important. I think that being intentional in our outreach, as we've been saying, is going to be really critical to how much we win. And so I do look forward to people making that effort to actually reach out to places they've never been before. I'll always uplift HBCUs, for instance. Not enough candidates come talk. You know, there are a lot of elected officials who don't even come talk to students at HBCUs. And so how can you ever expect us to, you know, the mass of us to want to vote for you if you don't even come talk to us and address our issues? We have a lot of institutional issues that never get brought up or talked about in the legislature, and then we get told that, you know, we're supposed to vote for Democrats who never spoke to us. And so I think that definitely has to be a part of everyone's calculation and consideration. Even if you don't think that the numbers are going to play out for you, if you don't make that intentional outreach, then it's no way, there's no way that the numbers will play out for you when it comes down to it. So that's where I'm at.
I think that's fair and a really fair assessment of everything. And you're speaking my love language when you talk about those down ballot races, because, you know, that's certainly something that we focus on at Texas Blue Action is, you know, those down ballot races we believe will flip the top and not the other way around. It's bottom to top, not top to bottom. And we also find that when you're doing that outreach, that it's so much easier to connect with people about policies that can be brought to you by your city council member, your school board member, your county commissioner, you know, those folks that are on the bottom that are, you know, the things that will trigger people to get engaged, even if that's having a conversation about the person that has the ability to fill the pothole down the street, that annoy, like whatever it is that brings that voter out, those conversations are much easier when you're talking about positions at the bottom of the ballot. And so I agree with you, and I'm so thankful that you brought that up. And so, Rick, now it's your turn. How are you feeling about going into 2022? Do you think that, you know, we'll make any progress? And does the outlook look good for Texas next year?
I think someone who always just stay cautious. I think if I threw all of my heart and soul into all these things, I feel like I could get crushed very easily. So I try to make sure that I'm not doing all that. But also, I think in a realistic sense, like, I think some of it relies on what the federal level Democrats do. I think if we're not delivering at a federal level, from what we just, you know, saw a big wave last year of wins, that what are people going to think about, like, well, what's the point of electing Democrats if they didn't deliver anything for me at the federal level? That translates down to all the way down to the local level. I think that's a big thing that we need to think about. And so I think, but beyond that, I also think that candidates must be unconventional in what they do here in Texas when they're running. I know a lot of folks are, you know, pushing for Beto O'Rourke to run, and I think that's totally fine. I think that'd be a good he'd be a good candidate. But I think because his unconventional campaign in 2018 of really reaching out to communities and not writing off folks at all, I think it's going to be something that all candidates adopt, making sophisticated campaigns that do not write off the Valley, do not write off HBCUs or young people, or just, you know, making sure things are accessible, events are accessible, and organizing accessible for folks. Because if you don't do that, you do stick to the old wisdom of like a Texas triangle method, you're not going to win, as we have not won over 20 years. So I think it's important that we say, you know, sometimes you got to buck the old book and say, let's see what we can do in a little newer way, even if we are looking at some of the old classic things that are just knocking on doors. I think we'll see some progress somewhere, but I think it'll, like Katya said, it'll require us to do a lot of work.
I think always, right, and all change is incremental. So, you know, we all have to keep doing what we're doing, and, you know, eventually we're going to get there. But, you know, to the point that you all have made today, what we can't do is ignore the youth vote. It's massively important, and we need those voices to be heard when candidates are being chosen to run as Democrats in Texas, because we need them to excite y'all and want everybody that you're working with to come and vote. And so I have one last question around, you know, the new maps. It looks like, and this is probably more targeted towards Jeffrey and Katya, you know, that we're finally going to get a real Democrat seat, congressional seat in Texas, in Austin, seat 37. So tell me what kind of candidate, and if you want to say names, your ideal candidate to run for that, or at least just give characteristics. I mean, this could be a real progressive seat for the first time in Austin, right? And there's a lot of rumblings about who's going to show up and try to run for that seat. So tell me who y'all would show up and vote for. Who do you want to see run for that seat? Because it's going to paint a picture of what we can do in the future, right? Next time we redistrict and all of those things. So tell me what you're thinking. Jeffrey, you go first. You look like you're ready to spill it.
I think it will be interesting to see who runs in 37. I think that we'll all agree to that, because it is a big blue seat. You know, it's a big blue target in that way as well. I will say that I hope that whoever runs in that seat is someone who is accountable to the community, that there's someone we see in the community, that we know their face, and that we know that they're going to be reliable when it comes time to vote, and they're going to actually call up, you know, community leaders. They're going to talk to the people who they need to talk to get an impression of the precise way that they need to vote. Not to say we're going to control this person or anything like that, but it needs to be someone who we trust for sure. And I think that it also needs to be someone who has really shown a commitment to the progressive values that we share in this city and the direction that we're trying to go in, and someone who is responsive to the changes that are happening in our state. Even though Austin has had its own demographic transitions, you know, when you're in whatever legislative seat, whether you're in Congress or down here at the State House and Senate, you know, you also should be thinking about how your actions are affecting everyone else, in a sense. And so I hope that whoever the candidate is also being responsive to the diversity of our state and the changes that are happening with respect to that. And I also just hope that there's someone bold and who's going to punch above their weight, shall we say.
Fair enough. I think that those sound like great guidelines, and I'm right there with you. And I think that, I mean, we could do a whole episode on the responsibility of congressional candidates that are in safe seats that don't show up to do the organizing work. We know that the five safest congressional districts in Texas have the lowest Democratic voter turnout. That's an issue, but we're going to have to do that another day. So you're right. I think that the point you made about making sure that whoever it is continues to understand the importance of supporting everybody in the community and continuing to do the work to turn out, you know, progressive voters in Austin is massively important. So Katya, what are your thoughts? What kind of person do you want to see try to run for that seat?
Yeah, I agree with almost everything Jeffrey said. I think I have very little to add other than I hope that they're young, and because there are so many campuses represented in Texas 37 and in this new congressional district, I think that that will be incredibly important. But I'm also excited to see Texas 35. And though despite that it literally looks like a redlined map of Austin from the 60s, and that's a little bit terrifying, and following down I-35, I think Austin has a lot of potential, and the chat has been talking a lot about there have been a lot of people doing work to engage local issues in the past few months, in the past few years, and fight a lot of local fights in the county commissioner's courts and in the state legislature as well. And so I would like to see someone that kind of goes back to the earlier point, that has earned our trust so far, that has continued to show up to engage community members in a lot of the issues that has been affecting Austin, and will continue to show up, and someone that we don't have to vet necessarily, a new person, because they have been engaged in local reforms already. And that's the type of person to see, and definitely name names, and so can't with representing an organization like Common Cause, but I think we're just really excited to have someone and hopefully look at the district that they are representing and look like the future of that district as well, because like what Jeffrey was mentioning, this will be the district for 10 years and shows a lot of potential for the next few decades of Austin's representation, and I think Austin will hopefully be moving more to be younger, more diverse, as we're seeing in an around campus areas, and I would love to see a candidate run for Texas 37 that represents that future as well.
100%. And Rick, I would love to have you weigh in. I know you don't live in Austin, but I'm sure you have thoughts.
I will say I actually do live in Austin. I'm currently at UT.
Right, oh, you do? Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, I assumed you lived in San Antonio. Yes. Okay.
No, I know. I champion San Antonio a lot everywhere I go. But yes, I'm currently in Austin, living on Riverside. I think as a student at UT Austin right now, I think I'll just say this out of the gates. I think it's about time that Texas has its own squad member in Congress. I think whoever's going to run here in Austin should be the progressive bastion from Texas and show that Texas is not a state that doesn't have any progressives here, especially in Austin, Texas. Of course, I hope Jessica Cisneros gets there first. But I also think that we could have two squad members from Texas. I think that would be really important to show that what the work progressives does down here, that there's folks who do want this kind of change. They do want a Green New Deal, Medicare for all, canceling student loan debt, all those things like that. I think there's a lot that I think Austin, this congressional district in Austin can provide with representation. And so I agree with Katya and Jeffrey's statements that I hope it's someone who's gonna be bold, who's gonna be young, who's gonna be fresh, but also someone that we know that will put in the work, has put in the work before, and won't let us down when they're there in Congress.
I 100% agree. I mean, we need to remember we're living in a city that brought more votes for Biden than Los Angeles. So, this is a huge opportunity for us. And I hate that it's at the cost of other districts that, you know, we all got packed together here into 35 and 37. But it is also an exciting time to be an Austinite and actually have, a potential Democrat representative. I know I got gerrymandered out of 21 and into 37. And so, you know, I'm feeling real good about that at the moment. So anyway, I want to thank y'all for being here today. And everybody who's listening, I want to say, please get involved with the organizations that are supporting the youth vote. Please get involved with the organizations that are concentrating and investing on getting out people of color, and listen to what they have to say. They are the future of Texas. They're massively important in this process. And we need everybody showing up for them too. So again, I want to thank Rick, Katya, and Jeffrey for having this conversation with me today. And I want to thank Progress Texas for hosting this podcast. And I look forward to seeing y'all again next week. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Blue Action Podcast, a production in affiliation with Progress Texas. Texas Blue Action is founded on progressive grassroots action, focused on year-round neighborhood organizing and committed to building sustainable democratic infrastructure in Texas. We turn out the voters that the Texas GOP fears the most. Production by me, Chris Mosier. Theme music generously provided by James McMurtry. Join Texas Blue Action at blueactiondems.com and also on Twitter and Facebook. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you again next week.